by the conclusion that he was just there to sabotage. And so he leaves office really without much to brag about. He put himself up number four on the greatest list of presidents in his first term. Why he would do that, I don't know. He wanted to be the next Ronald Reagan, and instead, he's the person who made Jimmy Carter rest a little bit easier by refusing to achieve more than Jimmy. His failure to use the legislature to achieve his goals, or even to attempt to achieve his goals, made a notable impression on many people, many political commentators. And now you see that all of the things that he did or tried to do, the vast majority of them, can be removed with one signature, which they will certainly be removed. And then his great achievement, Obamacare, is going. It's going to take a long time. It's going to be like getting weeds out or cancer, like getting a cancer out. But they're going to do it one law at a time to get rid of it. He never made any attempt to persuade the other side to join him. And you can go ahead and guess at to what the motivation and what the deep beliefs of Obama are. My take on him is that he was always insecure. He had a kind of an insecure personality, and he tried to overcome that. He tried to compensate for that by talking down to people, which I would assume when you talk down to people as a regular habit, that you're an insecure person who is kind of doubts your own abilities. But he refused to really get engaged in the political process, the legislative system, and had often communicated to people ideas such as he wished he didn't have to go through Congress, which he ended up not doing, that politics was dirty. He considered politicians people that he didn't want to spend time with, and felt himself to be better than. How exactly he came to that conclusion is a complete mystery, because all he really was in the end was a person with political ideals. And that's it, basically. And his political ideas were failed, of course. So anyway, we are where we're at, and we've got this continuing attempt to invalidate Trump, which, I mean, I'm just going to say what I think is the obvious thing. Trump has outmastered, he's outplayed, he's a chess master playing with checkers chumps, and he's outmastered, he's overcome, and he has beat down basically every single attempt to stop him. He's turned into a laughing stock, and now he's got all of these Democrats acting like children. He, if he wanted to, couldn't have done a better job of making them look foolish. So anyway, here's a little bit Chelsea Manning's commutation, what it is that the president stands for, other than off the shelf, over the counter socialism. I have no idea. He was very foolish to pretend that this brand of socialism, which has been tried many times and has failed spectacularly, most recently in Venezuela, it is a system that is designed to destroy economies, to impoverish people, to take away human rights. The fact that he acted like it was the greatest secret in history and something that warmed him on the coldest nights, warmed the cockles of his heart, is number one, it is It is morbidly hilarious because he was so fooled. But number two, it is just to see somebody pour 8 years of their life down the toilet like that is just breathtaking. The fact that he took us with him is sad, but we're going to recover. 6:14. Now I've got a little commentary on Chelsea Manning's commutation from the greatest political genius in history, Barack Obama. Fox News.
Columnist, of course, and Fox News contributor. So, Charles, if I look at this and I have this right, Chelsea Manning revealed classified government documents that many say put people's lives in danger, and she will serve a fraction of her sentence. But the leaking of John Podesta's emails is an absolutely unpardonable offense, according to many. Your thoughts?
No, I think you're pointing to the unbelievable hypocrisy. The administration, the president, gets all exercised over the WikiLeaks in the campaign, which essentially amounted to the private emails of John Podesta with gossip, backbiting, and kind of embarrassing private intra-party revelations. That's about it. Nobody died. These were not national security secrets. And yet Obama orders a report, has to be on his desk before he leaves office, gets very exercised, imposes sanctions on the Russians. Here we have a guy, Manning, a woman now, who released information that had to do with our actions in ongoing wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, including the identification of people who were working for us, many of whom we can presume were hunted down and killed as a result. I think it is simply astonishing that the president at the same time would be so exercised over the Podesta releases through WikiLeaks and then be extending, commuting the sentence of Chelsea Manning.
You know, there's a couple of things that are at work here. One is that many people believe that the sentence was too long for what it was, and all of the arguments that Catherine just pointed out in her reporting and what you have made point to the fact that people's lives were put at risk. So, but some people still say they believe it was too long, the sentence. The other issue is that this is was a troubled young man, now a woman, as you point out, and that there's a sensitivity to the transgender issue that may have swayed this decision in the White House in terms of how this prisoner was treated living in an all-male facility. Is any of that relevant? As sensitive as everyone may be to those issues and the personal strife, is it relevant in the decision to commute?
But think about what that means. This is bizarre. In other words, you can betray your country, publish secrets that endanger our soldiers, our allies, our interests, and then when you present with a gender problem, that gets you sprung out of a sense of sorrow or pity on the part of the officials. If you want to make a full-blown argument for mental illness, that perhaps this person's incompetent, something like that, have him end up in a psychiatric facility, sort of a John Hinckley post facto, I can understand that, although I doubt that's going to be the rationale we hear from the administration tomorrow.
Maybe Obama could be the tranny general of the United States. You know, we have a surgeon general, and we have a poet, a laureate, and we have these like kind of symbolic positions. Maybe he could be the tranny general, because it seems like Obama is highly motivated by the gay and lesbian community and transgenderism. Just suggestion, since Obama's his choice of, all of the stuff that Obama supposedly is thinking about doing, including owning an NBA team, where he would get the money, I have no idea, but maybe one of these crazy far leftist billionaires who used capitalism to rape, plunder, and destroy their opposition, and then suddenly became a lefty when they got to the top of the mountain. Maybe one of these people can loan him a few billion. It seems like everything that he's suggested to do is underemployment and not up to the abilities of this greatest mind in history. But then again, maybe we were misled. Anyway, a little bit of a dedication to Obama. Good time Charlie's got the blues. Good time Obama's got the blues. Kelly O'Connell, 619 on the button. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Obama, thank you so much. Thank you for leaving. Never thought this day would come. We'll be right back.
Everybody's gone away. Said they'll move into L.A. There's not a soul I know around. Everybody's leaving town.
All right, so... If you want to understand why socialism is so defective and failed, you know, I'm sure there's a thousand different ways to explain it and see it. But what is the most interesting to me right now is that we're living in a time of kind of hyper atheism, hyper secularism, I guess you'd say. And it seems like a lot of the problems that come out of socialism are based on this, this kind of misconception that if there's a separation between church and state, that everything has to be radically secularized, including government theory. And so you end up with a philosophy, a philosophical system that is aspirational. You want to take care of all the poor. You know, you want to make sure that everybody is treated fairly. You're going to dictate to people how to interact with others. And in doing so, you're going to erect a national prison in which you're going to call the shots and you're going to play God and your rules are going to be followed. And the aspiration beyond that is to turn the globe into this system. It's globalism. And, you know, I was thinking about this. There have been attempts in the past to create a one world trading system. That's one of the things that Napoleon wanted to do. And Napoleon was kind of a radical atheist, too. And he was going to kind of bring in this religion of humanity that his compatriot, Auguste Comte, wanted, this insane philosopher, literally insane, went crazy, went to a clinic, was discharged, and was discharged as being not cured. But I think that when you take out the historic connection to the past, this sense that we have come from somewhere and a certain set of ideas and principles and achievements and, you know, battles, various type of battles, some military and some of them social, societal, you throw that all out the window and replace it with a philosophy, the chances are not good that that's going to be successful, but that's what the socialists have done. And now the socialist minded people are these far lefties are trying to keep Trump from being recognized. And it seems like, you know, it just kind of seems like the type of thing that Donald Trump was built for, you know, the kind of thing that he just tears up. And, you know, so Obama's going out on a high note, 60% approval. I don't believe any of these polls that they put out. I don't believe anything in the press. There's nothing in the press that I believe anymore, because I think they've sold out. They've bought into leftism, far leftism, and so that you get the thing that you always get with leftism. So you reject the fact that America and the West was born out of a Christian mission, some sort of an attempt to Christianize these pagan tribes from a long time ago, and then what happened after that, and the fact that the church became this giant laboratory to test ideas in and then transfer them into the state. And they didn't mean to do that. That's the way that it kind of played out. But then you're going to come up with these people who don't have any connection to anything, who demand that religions that people don't, they claim that people don't have the right to express their religious beliefs in public. They don't want that. And they don't want, anything other than these philosophical doctrines that run the government. And then they can't figure out, because there's, so you look at somebody like Obama or John Kerry or fill in the blank, Hillary Clinton. These people are made into just kind of mindless robots by their beliefs, by these socialist beliefs. It's really kind of eye-opening. Probably the most shocking thing about the whole thing is that they refuse to look at what history has done, the historic ascent of the West, and then the catastrophe of leftism in the USSR and China and all these things. Up till today, these people refuse to admit the most basic or draw the most basic conclusions. It's one of the most baffling things that I notice every day is once you buy into leftism, your logic goes down the toilet. But it is the leftists who waste all their time. Instead of saying spend, it's better to say waste all their time talking down to people who are deeply resentful. So we've got a change of guard, and these people are not going away quietly. They're not going away quietly, and they're going to try to ruin everything. They don't accept the legitimacy of Trump. And my response to that is, so what? Who are you? You're somebody who has a temporary position in government, but you're going to tell everybody that if the system doesn't work in the way that you want it with the result that you want, that the whole system needs to be destroyed. That's a typical leftism. Only interested in power, only interested in their ideas being tried, have no interest in science, real interest in science. Have no interest in honesty, in watching results and picking the best outcomes. All they want is to have things their way, and they don't care if everybody suffers, because they will if they get their way, and they're going to do sabotage. And like I was saying yesterday, they have magical thinking. They believe, as long as they make up their mind that they're not going to accept Trump, that Trump is not going to really get into power. He might get into the office, but he'll never be accepted. And because he doesn't match their standards, he's done something to piss them off. That invalidates the whole system. So anyway, we'll take a break and come back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23, 1450, and 805-6180 to text.
Some call it a freight, some call it a plane. They said, sit down, don't waste your time. I guess they're right, it's wasting mine.
All right, so a few more facts about this pardon, and we've got here the question. Well, Julian Assange said he would offer himself up if they pardoned Chelsea Manning, Brendan Manning, whatever the guy's name is, Mr. Tranny. What do you think? Obama as Tranny General in Chief? I don't mean to suggest that he's a tranny, of course. He's just the general who looks out for trannies. I mean, isn't that the kind of thing that the president is clutched to his breast like a like a family heirloom, a string of real pearls. Isn't that the type of thing that he's acted like is more important than, you know, more important than the fate of humanity? Anyway, here's Assange.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange extends an offer to the U.S. Department of Justice. Forgive Chelsea Manning and he'll hand himself over. The offer came in the form of a tweet on January 12th. Assange has been wanted for more than 4 years after Swedish authorities charged him for sexual assault crimes. He has spent that time holed up in London's Ecuadorian embassy, protected from extradition by the Latin American country. Manning, a former Army intelligence analyst, was imprisoned for leaking classified information to WikiLeaks in 2010. She's currently serving a 35-year sentence, but a Justice Department official recently told NBC News that she was on the short list for President Barack Obama's final pardons. WikiLeaks seized on this report to urge Obama to commute Manning's sentence, though the group clearly feels like the case against Assange is weak. The tweet extending the offer ends, quote, despite the clear unconstitutionality of the DOJ case. For Newsbeat Social, I'm Matt Paul.
All right, now what are the chances that Hillary herself will be pardoned on the way out by Barack Obama, by Barack, greatest mind in history, Obama?
There's still an FBI probe going on with the Clinton Foundation. Senator Sessions the other day during his confirmation hearing said as attorney general he would recuse himself from anything having to do with the Clintons, which suggests there's still stuff going on. Is there any discussion right now by President Obama about any sort of preemptive pardon for Bill or Hillary Clinton?
I don't know anything about any investigations, and I don't have anything on pardons, preemptive or otherwise.
How about for Edward Snowden or Chelsea Manning?
Also don't, like, if the president is going to exercise any pardons, it'll be conducted straightforwardly, pursuant to our policies, and we'll make those decisions based on the merits, not on the politics of any particular matter.
Sure, yeah. Obama. Yeah, if there's one thing he stands for, it's, doing things the right way. Certainly nobody would argue that. Okay, so anyway, this guy leaks all of this stuff. He's in the military. He gets convicted. He's going to spend 35 years. He could have been executed for treason, but they've got now commuted it. So anyway, let me ask you this. What did now in kind of bearing in mind that Obama is leaving and he's going to be doing something else and he's got time for a second or third career, which I would think would include the post office. He'd be a letter carrier since a lot of people seem to choose that as a second career. A lot of government employees. What did the president stand for? What was it? What were the principles? What were the guiding lights of the president who didn't really, didn't seem to really embrace the job? He embraced the vacations. He embraced the attention. He's always, I think, presented himself as regarding himself as an extraordinary mind, but in his mind, what were the principles and what did he try to achieve? And, what did the guy stand for? All right. So the commutation and pardon process is straightforward. First, people convicted of crimes apply for executive clemency through the Justice Department's Office of the Pardon Attorney. Those applications are reviewed by the Deputy Attorney General's office before they make their way to the White House, where the president makes the final decision. When a commutation is given, the sentence someone is currently serving is cut short, but a commutation does not suggest they are innocent and does not do away with civil disabilities like not being able to sit on a federal jury or vote. Commutations are typically given while someone is serving time, and the president can only commute federal sentences. State-level convictions are out of the president's reach. Pardons, on the other hand, are usually granted after someone has already served their time. A pardon still doesn't suggest innocence, but it does allow felons to vote, sit on juries, and possess firearms. Pardons do not normally expunge criminal records, but the person's records are updated to show they were later pardoned, which can help a great deal when they apply for a job. So that is how that works. Now, let me get you some headlines here. Although it seems like my machine is kind of seizing up. Let's take a break. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM. Oh, there we go. Now, there's a report that Trump is going to eliminate 20% of government jobs, federal jobs. What do you think? What do you think about that? Trump operative Roger Stone survives assassination attempt. They believe he was poisoned with radioactivity. Protester sets himself on fire in D.C. What was that for? What are these people? You know what I don't understand? It's like a dying cult, right? It's like some gigantic cult like Zoroastrianism or something is dying and people are killing themselves. What are you killing yourself over? What are you lighting yourself on fire over? You've got this corrupt system, highly corrupt, led by a person who was underqualified by definition, by historic standards, didn't have the experience, was lacking in leadership skills, and has overseen the downgrading of the country, the world's greatest country. And then you've got this woman who's running this wildly corrupt so-called charity, and is a pathological liar, and you're gonna light yourself on fire for these people? I don't get. I mean, isn't there more to that's all life has to offer you, is these corrupt systems and these people? It's insane. All right, angst simmers in Washington. Worry and anger are building in Washington as Trump presidency nears. Radicals target D.C. Metro to block access. Well, they want to block free speech. They want to block access. That's how the left wins. Obama scores worst legislative record in history. I'll have to look into that one a little bit more. Hillary rumors won't go away. Amazon Corporation highway network to control self-driving cars. Wow, they're going to take over the country. Carlos Slim to launch Mexican TV channel in USA. Thought we had one already. George H.W. Bush hospitalized for shortness of breath. Snowden not pardoned. And Trump disses Tom Ford, our own Tom Ford, who owns a giant ranch. He's a gay, not to be redundant, he's a gay fashion designer who's got a big ranch up north. Jobs boom is continuing before Inauguration Day. Goldman Sachs profit soars. California is leading the resistance against Trump. God bless you, California. Another good choice. Another, other than becoming super far leftist, another good choice. 145 people frozen and waiting resurrection in an Arizona desert facility to get their diseases cured, cryogenically frozen. And New York Times budget cut, smaller newsroom. Well, you know what? You'd certainly earned it, Mr. and Mrs. New York Times. All right, we'll take a little break here and come back and have a little more news for you. All right, so we got some. All right, here we go. It seemed like Danny O'Keefe and Good Time Charlie was a good dedication for the president. He's got the blues. His entire years has been flushed down the toilet. And in this shocking thing, or maybe the inevitable thing, is the president has never had a higher opinion of his own success and his own self. Well, I guess when you don't believe in God, anybody can be a God, including yourself. We'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450 on KOBE 523, 1450 and 805-61802 text.
the damn Charlie's got the blues. The damn Charlie's got the blues.
Okay, so we've got a new round of storms coming through the Pacific Northwest in California, and the Pineapple Express is coming in. And so anyway, here's a little bit from Portland, mild stomping grounds.
Another winter storm is unfolding in the West, and boy, what a mess in Portland. You should have seen some of the stuff they dealt with on Tuesday. And this was, you know, not long after they just had some snow a couple of days ago. So you've got a good solid glaze of ice on top of the snow that has already fallen. There were, you know, parts of I-84 in both directions that were closed yesterday. They had a little over 0.3 inches at the airport in Portland, and that's ice. 0.3 inches of ice, that's a lot of ice. And they had about 0.5 inch in parts of the gorge. So once again, I-84 and I-90, especially east of Seattle and Portland, are going to be very messy today. The potential for a pretty good glazing. And remember, it really doesn't take much with this stuff. And apart from that, this storm is going to be much like the last couple have been in California. You've got a lot of snow up in the high terrain and a lot of rain down in the low country. So basically what we're looking at is several waves of energy coming in. You've got one coming in Wednesday into early Thursday. If we catch any break, it looks like maybe late Thursday, a quick little break, but then another round comes in. Same deal. Snow up in the Sierra. You've got rain down in the Central Valley, and it's going to be a lot of rain. Could have some flooding issues, I think, especially as you get closer to the coast, and several feet of snow up in the Sierra.
And the Sierras already have 20 or 30 feet up there. We'll take our last break and be right back. All right, I have one last clip for you from National Weather, and this is going into Texas, so I thought you might find this interesting in the Southeast. Check it out.
So
As we saw on Sunday, you can definitely have severe weather and flooding in parts of the South, especially this time of year. This is some video out of Dallas where they had some really nasty storms, big wind gusts, some street flooding, even a couple of tornadoes as well. And those are all the types of things we're going to be talking about, this next severe threat. And it's actually going to be a multi-day severe weather threat that starts on Thursday, and it's going to be for parts of the Gulf Coast, some of the usual spots for this time of year. So Jackson, Mississippi, up toward Birmingham, maybe even Huntsville, and then right along the Gulf Shore there, Louisiana, Mississippi, over to Gulf Shores, Alabama. We'll catch a little bit of a break during the day on Friday, and then overnight Friday, the severe threat ramps up again. Houston's going to be in play overnight Friday, and then we're going to shift back toward the east for Saturday and even farther toward the east on Sunday. Now, right now, it kind of looks like Sunday may end up being the worst day of severe weather. None of these days are going to be big tornado outbreaks or anything, but the potential does exist for a couple of tornadoes. I think damaging wind will be the number one threat. Also, some localized flash flooding when you look at some of these rain totals through Sunday.
And as always, Houston is going to get 1 to 2 inches. 60 Democrats are planning on staying out of the election, or the, pardon me, the inauguration. So what do they gain from that? You know, to be honest, it's just what they gain is basically a short-term boost from their own party, but long-term, they make themselves the party that doesn't really matter, because if you're not tracking reality, if you're saying that your opinion of what's legitimate is more important than than the voters, and you can counter that and say, well, the voters voted for Hillary. Well, that's not how the system is set up. The system was not a direct vote. Here's a newsflash for you. Electoral College makes it an indirect vote, and if you didn't have that factored into your process in running for president, you don't deserve to be president. Resort Arizona town on alert after rabid bobcat attacks and injures 4 people. Phoenix, people flocking to Arizona are not used to the idea of wild bobcats. And the bobcat first struck in Sedona. And it injured 4 people, a dog and a house cat, in 3 separate attacks. And first struck Thursday morning. And so the bobcat was running around chasing people, biting them and all this stuff. And then they finally shot and killed the bobcat. Maybe Obama can do a national day of mourning for that. Power outage in Las Cruces, second day in a row. There were 5,000 customers without power on Tuesday. Monday afternoon, there were 13,000. They have not given a reason for this, but it was restored. Rising U.S. shale oil output threatens OPEC. We've busted OPEC with our shale drilling, our shale oil drilling, and it's only getting bigger. The Permian Basin now has a buy-in from ExxonMobil, $6.6 billion land acquisition, and last year they spent, I believe it was $27 billion in the Permian Basin, if you can imagine that. So oil is not going away. All right, so Obama's legacy is, the president said, my attitude about something like the presidency is, you don't want to be just be the president. You want to change the country. You want to make a unique contribution. You want to be a great president. He's obviously spent a lot of time thinking about this. It is a shame that the president didn't do anything about this. The president was so caught up in his greatness, you know, and when he first got into office, everybody's saying they're the smartest person who ever came into office and a true genius. And Obama took it so seriously. He accepted that Nobel Peace Prize as an investment in the future. And there, I don't know of anybody other, maybe I don't even think Frankie would call up and say that Obama was the greatest president in history. I don't know anybody. Maybe my buddy Pete, cannot admit when he's wrong, could say he's the greatest president in history based on stubbornness more than anything. But Obama had an opportunity to make the world a better place. And he took all of his stupid ideas and bad instincts that came out of a ruined childhood, and he applied them And he got the only thing that you can expect from that when you apply leftism is a full-fledged disaster. And now his party is mortally wounded, and he's got nobody to thank for himself because he never challenged his own ideas. He's as much in love with Marx today as he was the day that he went into office, and that's a tragedy. 6:59, and we're going to talk about local charity when we come back here. So we'll take a little little segue here. 6:59, Kelly O'Connell, MLS Cruises, Sam 1455-23, 1450 to Colin, and 805-6180, the text machine.
You know my heart keeps telling me you're not a kid at 33. You play around, you lose your wife. You play too long, you lose your life. I got my pills to ease the pain. Can't find a thing to ease the rain. I'd love to try.
Well, good morning. We do have a special guest in the studio this morning, and the Gospel Outreach has a new director, and so I suggested that he come on the show. Henry Young is here, and I guess Bob Jessica is gone, but good morning, Henry.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
Doing just fine. A little foggy outside, but
indeed it is foggy. It's about 34 degrees right now, so be careful out there. All right, so Henry, I went over to say hello to Bob, and I was informed that Bob is now in California.
Soon will be. I think he's touring the southern part of the U.S., Florida, and then up the coast a little bit, and then back before he goes to California.
And he's going to help a family member, so... Bob Jessica did a remarkable job building the Gospel Rescue Mission up, didn't he?
He did. We are on the soundest financial footing that we've been on in years, and that's due largely in part to Bob's work.
Bob had a military background, I believe a naval background, and a lot of leadership experience. So anyway, he chose you, and the board chose you to take over. When did you take over?
First of the year.
And give us a little background on yourself.
Well, I'm a native New Mexican. I was born in 1950 in Ruidoso, New Mexico. We moved here 4 years later in 1954. And except for 12 years when I was in California, we have lived here ever since.
Okay. And... So how did you get involved in the Gospel Rescue Mission, that undertaking?
Well, I had been familiar with the mission for years. I had started a church a few years back, and when my son drowned, we had the church, and I applied at the mission one time earlier. I was one of the two finalists for the chaplaincy at that point. And then in 2015, the position came open again, and I was hired by Bob to take over the chaplain's position in June of 2015.
And what's your church background? What sect is it? What denomination?
Denomination. It's Baptist, sir. I went to a Baptist Bible college, and we are currently, even though the word Baptist isn't in the title, we have those roots. I serve at Sierra Vista Community Church.
All right. And what's your personal approach to what is it about the Gospel Rescue Mission that interested you? What was it in your beliefs, other than being a pastor?
It's all about helping people. I got started with this when I was in Southern California after we got out of Bible college. rather unique situation in the fact that the pastor we had out there went to the same Bible college. He had been saved while he was in prison for almost killing someone with his bare hands. And after he got saved in prison, he came out, worked for the same church for which I was working at that time as a teacher and principal for mid, high, and high school. So when we decided to start a church, there were 12 of us, and it was literally working with people that were homeless off the street. He said he didn't care if we ever grew beyond the first 12 members, as long as we were helping people. So that's where it started. And I learned to work with people who had all kinds of problems, drugs, a background of abuse, mental health issues, you name it, we worked with them. That was as valuable to me in this ministry as the 4 years in college.
And so that was in California?
Yes, it was.
In what city?
It was actually the work was in Anaheim. I had gone to school in a little further north by Pomona.
Yeah, Pomona. But I would assume that you had it was kind of a learning curve, and there were a lot of eye-opening events, and I guess you get introduced into what they call the human condition.
Definitely. And, you know, that's one thing I'd like to point out, Kelly. A lot of people seem to be afraid of the homeless. And I think it's due to lack of knowledge. Many times we don't want to be around them. We're afraid we might get sick or catch some of the bugs that they may be carrying around. And that can happen. But when it's all said and done, those people are no different than any one of us. They have the same needs, the same wants, and all they really want is enough to live, not necessarily comfortably, but they want a place to sleep that is safe and something to eat. And then the most important thing next to that is having someone that they can talk with. And it's very important to build a relationship, most of the time one-on-one, with many of these people.
Well, maybe that's another reason that people avoid the homeless, is that there's this sense that they are bad people, that they've done something wrong, that they're drug users, that they've dropped out on life, that they're freeloaders, bums, all this stuff. What would be your reaction to that, or your response?
You know, it's interesting. We just had an article that I read recently called Toxic Charity. And that actually enables the freeloader mentality. Instead of giving them a hand up or giving them a handout, and what are they going to do? They're going to come back for another handout. What we need to do is teach them how to do for themselves by offering training on how to get a job, help them get a GED. We have someone that can even teach them how to write a resume, how to apply for a job online, because that's about the only way you can get a job anymore. All of these, plus we have hygiene classes, health classes, and even can supply, through an outside company, mental health services. So we cover all of those. And yet the basics are what they need most, is just a way to connect with other people.
And so the left, I hate to point this out, but we've been kind of talking on the show about the transition between the two parties and some of the ideas that the left represents. There is a set of ideas out there that says what these people are lacking, I guess it's kind of classic Marxism, what the people are lacking is an economic foundation. And if you give that to people, then everything else will take care of itself. And therefore, what the homeless are the most egregious example of poor. They're so poor they can't even afford to rent a house or an apartment. That these people just need the money that the rich have. I guess the rich have taken from the poor is the argument in it with Marx. But what about that idea that they just need some money and get out of their way?
I think we can look at examples of that mentality having failed. Most of the HUD housing is at least subsidized, where they are given money or their rent is reduced and the rest of it is paid by the government. Well, what happens to those homes? Since they have no true ownership, many of those places, in fact, the majority, get trashed. They have no respect for the property nor themselves. And I think just from historical examination, we can see that that mentality doesn't work.
All right. So let me kind of boil this down for you and see if you accept this. We've got this idea that it is the job of mankind to help other men and women, children, and that we will do it through this kind of this largesse or this charity, this giving. And so the state takes the place of the church. We are told that you're not supposed to, you know, don't give your religion to these, don't force religion on these people. They've got enough problems. And don't moralize or anything. Just give them what they need and get out of the way. That has taken the place of the church model that was established for about 1900 years of charity. The idea of charity comes out of the church. That's actually something I've published an article on. And so you're saying that that model is ineffective and maybe it creates a false god along the way.
That's correct. You know, the church has given up or allowed the government to usurp authority in several areas. You've just been talking about the welfare portion. And the Bible clearly states that we are to take care of those that need welfare, especially the widows.
Widows and orphans.
Yes. Yeah. So that is very biblical. The other areas where the church has given up their rights, you might say, were in the field of education and... Well, those two are the main two.
Well, also in economics, the economy, there was the idea in the history of the West of what's called a calling. And people are called to do various things based on their abilities and their perceived need. So we've gotten rid of that idea, too.
We have. In fact, if you look at the English names, many of the last names indicate the trade for which they had been groomed, which was many times passed down from father to son, from generation to generation. I'll give you one quick example. My son-in-law's last name is Thatcher. Well, what did they do? Thatchers made roofs for the houses at that time that were made out of basically plant materials that were thatched together to put on top of the house.
Also known as straw.
Yeah.
So, and the last name of Baker.
Yeah, guess what they did?
And Cartwright so many of these names have had to do with the idea that was built up in the history of the West, which was the son follows in the footsteps of the father and is trained as a child to be able to take over his profession.
Correct.
Well, let's take a little break here. We have Henry Young, who's the head of the Gospel Rescue Mission. How do people get in contact with you or do donation of time or material money, something like that?
They can call our telephone number, which is 523-7727, or just come down to the mission at 1050 West Amador.
And you can't miss it. You've got the Hope, the City of Hope, or what's it called exactly?
Community of Hope.
Across the street, which is not your You don't run that, but you've got the Gospel Rescue Mission across the street from that. So when you see people crossing the street, you look over and you see the tent city and everything. You're across the road from that.
Correct. When I give directions, I tell everyone across from Horse and Hound.
Right. Okay. A little Van Morrison here for you. Be Thou My Vision in honor of the Gospel Rescue Mission. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, same 1450-523, 1450 and 805-6180. And we have Henry Young, who's the director. What's your formal title?
Chaplain.
Executive director and chaplain. We will be right back.
Be thou my vision, O Lord of my heart. Not be all else to me, save that thy heart. Thou my best thought in the day and the night. Waking or sleeping, thou presence my life.
Back and with Henry Young and the leader of the Gospel Rescue Mission, and I'm looking for the numbers of people of, that are homeless. And I've got a one article by Reuters here. And let's see if I can pull this one up. Reuters says more than 500,000 people homeless in the United States. Does that sound about right? Or
from things that we get through the Association of Gospel Rescue Missions, which does not govern anyone. It's actually a tool bag for all of the missions which are part of it. They're always giving us statistics. So that sounds just about right.
All right. So let's talk about something. Why do people fall into homelessness? I know each person's going to have a different story, but what are the trends that story, you know, you've been doing this, been involved in this for decades, and you no doubt have a strong feeling and you obviously have come to some conclusions.
Most of the cases are either bad decisions or broken marriages. The rise of those that are coming into shelters of any type are single women with children due to a broken marriage.
Now, that is an interesting thing. I'd like to pick your brain on this, Henry. We in America 20 or 30 years ago, divorce and abandonment of your children was not quite as common. 50 years ago, it was almost unheard of. And we have developed a very utilitarian, I guess you'd say, view of marriage and dating and sex. And it seems like that the children that a person produces, especially for the men, because the men are not a lot of times saddled with the kids. It's kind of an anecdote. It's one part of the story. Whereas say 50 years ago, the main purpose that you had in life, for men, was besides having a job, was getting married and having children and taking care of them, your wife and your children. That has passed away. Have you drawn any conclusions on what happened there?
Well, let's look at our own history here in the U.S. Many of the people, say even 40, 50 years back, many people then, if there was a problem and a broken marriage occurred, the family took care of that woman and children in most cases.
Grandpa and grandma, aunts and uncles?
Correct, which is a biblical concept of the family taking over the responsibility and providing for those families. But as culture has changed, that has been lost. Because now, well, they're on their own. We don't have the money to take care of them. They're going to have to find somewhere else to go.
All right. Our whole idea of the responsibility for children has changed radically. I'm still trying to get my head around this idea that, you know, more than half of women are now choosing to have kids out of wedlock, choosing to. And so if anything happens in that family, you got one safety net, and that's that mother.
And you know what? Who is responsible for much of that mentality? It's our welfare system again, because the more children you have, whether it's in wedlock or out of, you can get more money from the government for each child. So many times there is a payback for having another child.
Right, right. So, but the upshot is that these people are lacking the stability of a marriage and two adults to look over the kids. You've got these, if it's a single parent, it's that single parent is that much closer to coming down to the rescue mission, right?
To going to any shelter. Sometimes they go to the battered women's shelter, wherever they can find, basically.
And are things getting better or worse? Looks like we could be leaving a time of more secularism, leftism, socialism, whatever, from the current administration. We're passing into an administration that could be more conservative, although nobody really knows what Trump believes in practice. But as a society, which direction are we headed, in your opinion, and from your observation?
I'm not going to go out on that limb simply because I don't know. God knows the future. I don't. But here are the trends that I do know will occur in the future. As we get closer and closer to the time when Christ is coming back, I think things will only get worse from a biblical perspective.
All right. But in the meantime, you have to, you know, mind your P's and Q's, and you have to, what are the things that you guys offer practically? I mean, I know that you have a biblical or a, you know, a Christian view of this, but if somebody shows up and says, I don't believe in God, or I'm a Muslim or something, you still take them in.
Definitely. They don't have to become a, quote, Christian to stay there. We don't force them to even do anything other than obey the rules that we have. And when they come in, if they're a short time stay, they do come to chapel at night. But, you know, there's many chapels or many of the missions now that are not requiring attendance
to chapel.
To chapel.
What do you think? What do you think about that?
They're finding that when they have the choice, many times the attendance goes up. Now, why? I don't know.
Well, maybe because people prefer freedom and free choice.
Correct.
Talking to Henry Young right now about the Gospel Rescue Mission, there's been a change at the leadership, but I assume that we're on the same mission as when Bob Jessica was here. We'll be right back to continue on and consider during this time of, you know, it's cold out there, if you have anything to donate, blankets or coats or anything else, your time or money. Gospel Rescue Mission takes in the worst cases and provides a safety net for them. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-61802. Text.
Be thou my wisdom, be thou my true word. I ever with thee and thou with me, Lord. Thou my great Father and I thy true Son. Thou in me dwelling, and I with thee one.
Well, we've got Henry Young, who's the director and the chaplain for the Gospel Rescue Mission. And all right, so somebody shows up to a person who's fallen on hard times, shows up to the Gospel Rescue Mission. To walk us through a little bit of what, you know, somebody's brand new, just shows up. Walk us through what happens when they get there.
Whether it's man or woman, they go through an intake process. They do have to provide some form of ID. Then after they are checked in and they are scanned for weapons with one of the ones, everything that they bring in is taken out and inspected to make sure there are no drugs or weapons, things of that nature. Then after that, they are assigned a bed, not can. They are requested to take showers. They then, and all of this intake starts a little earlier on the women's side, and then the men come in, 4:30 to 6, they can check in. They have their meal after they check in, and then chapel starts at 7, it's over by 8. Those who hadn't been able to get a shower earlier can get their shower, they're in bed by 9. There are sections in the dorms that are separated. Those that are just there for the overnight and the meals, the rescue portion, are in two areas. Then the people that are on the program trying to rehabilitate themselves are in another dorm, same hallway, but it's in a separate room. And that is virtually the mirror on the women's side, except that you have some of those who have children that are by themselves in special rooms.
Okay. And so when a person comes and, you know, checks in and everything, how long can somebody stay at the mission?
The old rule used to say 3 days. So that has been amended. They are there for three days to see how they will react to the rules and regulations and how they play well, if they play well with others, all of those factors. Actually, they can stay there indefinitely as long as they are abiding by the rules.
Okay, so, but you guys would like more capacity for, you'd like to be able to have more people stay there?
Oh, always. We want to be able to help as many as we can. So we would, in the future, love to build another building that could house more and increase what we are doing as well as how many we are helping.
And what else would you like to be able to do?
Well, most missions, when missions first started, they only had one phase. That was the rescue portion to give them the bed and the meals. We have the facilities to take on the second section, which is the rehabilitation, to provide them with the tools to sustain themselves in our world, in a functioning economy. In other words, the tools to get a job, to have their own place. We provide those tools. But now the third phase, we find that you need a transition. Many of those, after they get a job, well, they can't move out the next day. They don't have the money saved up. So we need a place where they are essentially graduating into another phase of programming where they have a semi-private or a private apartment while they are working and saving money to get their own place. So in the future, that's what we would like to provide. And then we could rearrange a few things, office space for administration, several reasons for building that third building.
And how is fundraising going?
You know, it's amazing that you ask that. We just finished the year of 2015 with the highest December ever. We broke a record on donations, including what has come in from the thrift store. So that was over $100,000 between the cash donations and the thrift store.
But your new building is going to cost millions.
Correct.
So you're still fundraising?
Yes, we will be.
All right, Kelly O'Connell with Henry Young and Gospel Rescue Mission. We'll be right back and ask him. I'm going to ask him what backgrounds of the people that he's met coming in, what kind of backgrounds these people have, just to kind of fill out your understanding of the homeless and those who are currently down and out. 741 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, and 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back.
Beat out my breastplate, my sword for the fight. Beat out my armor and beat out my might. Thou my sole shelter and thy my high tower. Raise down me heavenward so far.
Okay, we're here with, if you're just tuning in, Henry Young. He's the leader down at the Gospel Rescue Mission. And Henry, let me ask you this. What are some of the stories? What would be a typical story that you'd hear for somebody coming to the mission? If you could kind of sum up some of the stories you've heard.
Most of the stories begin with, I got kicked out of my house, or I've had problems most of my life with drugs or medical problems. You know, they're varied, but many of them fall into the same pattern of even some of these veterans that have come back and had the money to get their own place. The traumas that they'd been through, and some of them actually getting hooked on painkillers while they were recovering from injuries, that started the drug dependency, and they've just never beaten it. Along with PTSD, you throw that in, and they're fighting a losing battle.
Yeah. So do do veterans pose a higher challenge in terms of housing and getting them off the streets and returning them to the people with residences, that population?
I don't really think they're any higher risk. I think they're people are people, as I said before, and anyone can find themselves in the same situation. Things could happen today or tomorrow where you or I could be in the same situation that a lot of these people are in and wondering, looking around saying, how did I get here? Well, it's usually either poor decisions or most of them will tell you it was not my fault.
When you hear that, what's your reaction?
I usually, you have to approach them in a manner that illustrates
not,
love.
Yeah, but I'm sure you're not going to be rude to them, but from the inside, that's human nature to not want to, if something bad has happened, it's human nature to not want to accept that you were part of it.
Right, but ultimately, it's not going to get better until we do accept the fact I'm here because I did things wrong or made bad decisions.
All right. So you had mentioned drugs. What percentage of the people that come in there do you think are struggling with drug issues or alcohol?
I would say it's over 70%.
Now, cause or effect, did the drugs cause them to lose track of their life and fall into homelessness, or do they use drugs as a result of falling in hard times? What's your thinking there?
Both. It can go either way.
Well, how does drug use affect the average person and make them more likely to become homeless?
Because they're not in their right mind. Drugs affect us, whether it's prescription drugs or street drugs. It does, in some way, affect our mind because we're not in control. So the up-and-coming thing is that more people are getting addicted to prescription drugs that are not used correctly. It has seemed to get more prevalent over time, and then it is supplemented with street drugs and things that, one that hasn't even been labeled as a drug yet, but has caused a lot of havoc lately, is spice.
Mm-hmm. Well, spice is definitely a drug. It's artificial marijuana, and
there's
psychotic episodes that are associated with that.
But it can still be sold legally right here.
Huh. Well, one other question about homelessness, and I'm going to just go off of the statistics that I've seen. The number one driver for poverty in America is single parent, normally single female mother, mothers, households. And I would assume that's been verified in your observations.
It has. The woman's population in missions is growing, while men's remains fairly constant. Some places they're even on the decrease, but nationwide, more and more women, more and more children.
Now, I'm looking at this article from socialsolutions.com, a blog on homeless statistics. About 5,500 people homeless, 83,000 or 15% are chronically homeless. Does that sound about right? 15% of the people are going to be homeless no matter what?
Yes.
Let's take a break here. We have one more run of ads here, and we can discuss the cause, what your opinion on that is, why some people are chronically homeless. 750, Kelly O'Connell, I'm Las Cruces here with Henry Young. He's the head of the Gospel Rescue Mission, and that's down on Amador. You can't miss it. And if you want to go down there and introduce yourself and donate or make a donation or volunteer your time, they're always ready for that. We'll be right back. Well, folks, we've got Henry Young in here for one final leg of the show and Gospel Rescue Mission. Henry, we do appreciate you coming on the show, but there is a group of people that are known to be chronically homeless. And I think for me, this is the most mystifying group of people, because one would think with the amount of resources in America and the amount of time and money we've thrown at this issue, these people would have had a chance at some point to get out of homelessness, yet they stay in something that the average person can't imagine: sleeping rough, carrying your stuff around in a shopping cart, being under the elements, being at the threat of, especially for females, the threat of being attacked by other homeless people or by anybody, and yet they are chronically homeless. How should we understand this? What's the cause of that?
Sometimes it's not easy to understand, but because I have asked some, and here again, many of those were the women, but I've also found it among the men. So, well, why don't you want to work on getting a job and eventually moving out of here? And I've had the same answer over and over again: because I don't want to be alone. I have friends here.
Wow.
And I want to stay with my friends for the rest of my life.
I would have never, ever guessed that as the reason. And it's pretty foggy out there. I'm just looking out the window. But I would have never guessed that it would have been something like that. How do you understand that?
Sometimes I don't. There is one lady, and this one I know the reason. One lady that goes back and forth from our facility across the street. She went into St. Luke's, and there was a social worker there that noticed her and took an interest, asked her if she had Social Security disability. She said, no, I've applied, but I've never gotten it. So the lady kind of took her under her wing and helped her apply. It got approved. And because of her mental condition, she said, no, I don't believe it. I've been promised stuff before, and they didn't come through. She said, it's approved. We can give you money, but it has to go through a payee that has control of your money. No, never mind. I don't want it.
So maybe people that don't want any change, and that's, is it possible that they're hanging on to the one thing that they know is stable, their instability, their homelessness? I mean, there are some people that are choosing to be homeless.
True.
And that would be this out of this chronic group. All right. So we're pretty much out of time. Any concluding thoughts for the listeners?
So for my conclusion, I just say thank Las Cruces for their support, their efforts in helping the Las Cruces Gospel Rescue Mission. Had trouble getting that out. And just ask them to keep up their prayers, their donations, volunteerism, because we do have a lot of people to help.
Thank you so much. And how about a phone number for the rescue mission?
523-7727.
And coats, blankets, that type of thing?
Any donations are welcome. There are times when we do need all of those, when we need socks, even donations of new underwear, both men and women, anything that people want to give.
Thank you for coming on, Henry. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Henry Young, head of the Gospel Rescue Mission. And so if you're looking for a way to do a donation or charity that would really appreciate your help and use it for a good purpose, you know that they use it on the spot. It's not sent to some other location and distributed. All right, we'll take you out with a little bit of Van Morrison, Be Thou My Vision, one of the oldest hymns recorded from the 8th century Ireland. And used to listen to this when I was over there. Have a great day. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. See you back in 22 hours. Be careful in that fog. Ciao.
heart. My King of Heaven, my treasure thou art. Oh, my King of Heaven, when battle is done, grant heaven's joy to me right.